Blog Talk Radio.
Depending on your time zone, and welcome everybody to Nightlight. Welcome light workers, light body energies, seekers of the light, watchers, wardens, indigos, soothsayers, mystics, questers and querents, journeymen and journeyers, seekers, star children and philosophers, and all those who are seeking reason and magic in these times of awakening, evolution, and transformation. I'm Barb DeLong, your host, and along with Jeannie and our guest tonight, Laura Linhan, we invite you to come in and gather around our nightlight in the darkness and confusion of the times. This show represents a sort of pit stop on your cosmic journey, so sit back, share your light with other light-minded people, and gather for a time to be sheltered from the storms of evolution and change. This is our own very small oasis in the turmoil that we call creation. Share with us your light, we'll share ours with you, and with any luck, we can generate enough light to not only light our ways, but provide light enough for others who are seeking as well. These journeys that we're on began a very long time ago and will continue long after this lifetime has faded into memory, so gathering together as we do every week generates energy that can and is drawn on by countless others. Excuse me. The coming together and blending our lights creates energy that serves not only ourselves, but humanity as well. If you'd like to learn more about me, I invite you to visit my website, barbaradelong.com. Ton of information there, as well as my schedule and all of the different shows I do and the things that I'm involved in. And on Friday afternoon, We take Nightlight into the afternoon where we have spiritual readings and we do all sorts of fun stuff on that show. So that's a different type of show where you get to call in and we get to read you and we get to learn from each other. This show is basically a show for information. This show is where we're kind of investigating a lot of the metaphysical, paranormal, mystical things that are out there, those things that sometimes go bump in the night, sometimes not. And we're talking to a lot of very, very interesting people on lots and lots of different topics. Next week, we're talking about UFOs with Nick Rossler, who wrote an amazing book called In Focus Paranormal. Tonight, we have Linda Lenhard, and you know I keep pronouncing her name wrong probably because I've only, it's not Linda, it's Laura, by the way, because I only know her really as Laura. I never use her last name, so she'll tell you how to pronounce it right when she comes on. She's an amazingly fascinating lady, and her entire life has been one of spiritual enlightenment and mystical searching and really looking for her place and a way of manifesting her energy and helping others to find insight and magic and their own spiritual pathways. She was raised in California, but in 2007, she opened an amazing store called The Talisman, and that's located in Monroe, Connecticut. And it's a store that you know, has tons of metaphysical and spiritual stuff in it. It has workshops and all sorts of amazing stuff. And she puts out a monthly newsletter that is just phenomenal. And it's called Metaphysical Musings. And you can find that in all her publications, I would imagine. She is here tonight. You know, she wears many, many hats. And I wouldn't just, you know, pigeonhole her any place. If I was going to call her anything, I would call her a spiritual metaphysician because she has delved into so many different areas and educated herself and expanded her own wisdom dramatically. She's a source for all sorts of insight on just about any topic you care to mention. Tonight, we're going to tap her brain and her knowledge and her wisdom about something that is near and dear to her heart, and that's Wicca. And I don't know about any of you, but I had a lot of misconceptions about Wicca, and I'm hoping to help, along with Laura, to dispel some of these misconceptions that all of us have been sort of fostering for an awful long time. I'm going to pull Laura on. Hi, Laura. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, you are so welcome. I'm so happy to be here, Barbara.
Well, I got to tell you, I picked this topic because I knew it was one that you had a great deal of information on, and I have to admit, I did some boning up myself, and I have to tell you that while I thought I knew what Wicca was, I am among those uninformed that are sitting around saying, of course I know what that is. It's been around for millions of years and stuff like that, and it actually hasn't been.
No, it has not been around for millions. It's been around since 1954 when it was established as a religion by Gerald Gardner, and it is a recognized religion. A few years back, some people worked very hard, and some of those members of the Wiccan community live here in Connecticut, to enable soldiers to have pentacles engraved on their tombstones. That was a big fight, and it was a hard-won fight, but it establishes us firmly as a religion, and we deserve the rights and the recognition accordingly. So it's been a long road since 1954, because prior to that, Gerald Gardner had to meet and do his thing secretly, as did everyone, because it was illegal to practice the religion of witchcraft or Wicca.
Well, you know, I think what really has fascinated me with, you know, everybody thinks of witches and they think of cauldrons and bad things, and you know, and the reality is Wicca is the worship of nature and earth energy, and has nothing to do with all of that bad stuff. So how did it get such a bad rap?
It got a bad rap because I got to say, anything that Christianity couldn't destroy, it demonized. And where witches, Wicca and witchcraft are used interchangeably by many people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right and wrong. Every Wiccan is a witch, but not every witch is Wiccan. Wiccans adhere to a threefold law, and that includes the precepts that you harm none.
Mm-hmm.
However, Satanists call themselves witches. Magicians call themselves witches. The Wicca umbrella is as inclusive as the Christian umbrella is. So when you say I'm a Christian, are you Catholic? Are you Seventh-day Adventist? Are you Presbyterian? Are you, you get my drift. You're Baptist.
I do.
The Wicca umbrella includes Gardnerian, Alexandrian, a hedge witches, Strega, and not all of those adhere to that threefold law, that idea of harm none or anything you do comes back to you in threes. But the other thing that with witchcraft and Wiccans, both, they worship both God and goddess. It's a dual religion in that respect. So that makes it a little different than what people are used to. We see the God and goddess, the male and female, so it's polarity expressed.
Something that fascinated me, especially with the goddess, is that the goddess is at least in some places, explained as it really is a trilogy. It's the Virgin, the Mother, and the Crone.
That's right. And that's echoed in nature in the three phases of the moon. The moon it symbolizes the goddess. The sun symbolizes the god. In the goddess, the moon cycle actually mirrors a woman's own menstrual cycle. The waxing, the full moon, and then the waning, which, of course, waxing is the young girl coming to her fruition, the full moon, woman at her peak, and then as she wanes, grows older, becomes the crone. So the moon is very important, but it's also important to know that we don't give more attention to one than the other. You know, the day and the night are divided by 12 hours, half and half.
Mm-hmm.
God and goddess both comprise the one. So while we will often seem to be giving a lot of attention to goddess, 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 it's just more to balance the patriarchal scale, because for so very long, the big three religions, Muslim, Christianity, and Judaism, are patriarchal.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of our known society has been patriarchal, and a punitive God, a punitive father God. Don't please him, you go to hell. Make him angry, punish you. Not really. I mean, for most of us, for a lot of us, that isn't a happy thought, and that's not really how we choose to see deity.
No, and you know, I think that. With the coming of a quote-unquote new age, so to speak, yet again, people are drifting from the hellfire and damnation concept of a creator into that of a more loving, compassionate, welcoming creator. So, you know, and I think that I would like to see, you know, a blending of all of this. When I talk to people who are on the other side, the thing that they tell me that is so impressive is that while there are different edifices and churches that people can go to, the message is the same in every one. And
as you know, because you've come to my store and you've worked at my store, you know, Talisman is a New Age store, not a witchcraft store. I'm a witch who owns a New Age store, and we celebrate universal spirituality. It's the idea, the belief, the principle that all paths lead to the one. That being said, the popularity of Wicca is many reasons why people are being drawn to this religion right now, this earth-based, gentle religion. And in part, it's a knee-jerk reaction to the very real environmental concerns that we have now as a people. More and more people are waking up to the reality that our earth is in dire straits. These are these are bad times indeed, environmentally. And we worship the earth. We worship. Listen, we're tree huggers. We are. You want to know what Wiccans are? You find us in Greenpeace. You find us in soup kitchens. You find us in animal rescue. Anywhere where there is help for nature and its creatures, you will find Wiccans there.
Now, were the Druids sort of Wiccan, or
no?
Are
they were
different?
Not. They were a religion of which we know very little because they didn't keep written records. So there isn't a lot written down or known about the Druid religion. What we do know that it was a nature-based religion. And of course, the trees, the woods, healing, a lot of the healing arts came there. And in fact, to be a witch is to heal. Wicca means wise one, and so it is to know how to use the herbs, the stones, the natural healing. And then, of course, we know another knee-jerk reaction is our new distaste. Many people are waking up to the idea that, you know, you don't pop a pill for every problem you have.
Oh,
so looking
yeah.
for ways to cure, not just treat illnesses, but let's cure them. And who benefits when we treat illnesses? The pharmaceutical companies. Because
yeah.
they sell their little poisonous pills there, and they sell them endlessly. You're a lifetime commitment, and if you got a problem from those pills, guess what you do? You pop another pill.
Well,
and a lot of people are tired of popping pills, or as they lose their health insurance, they're saying, well, now what do I do?
That's very true. And, you know, I was just, I had the TV on for noise earlier today, and they have a new series on called Mountain Men. And
I love that show. I don't watch much TV, but I've caught like 3 or 4 episodes of that show, and it's really good.
What one of them had a cold, and he went out into the woods looking for something called yellow root that the Indians have used for generations to chew on to get the cold out of his system. Excuse me. And then he took a sauna, and
yep.
then he went back out to work, and it was sort of like, you know, if I could go into the backyard and find something, and the only trouble with yellow root is it makes your teeth yellow because they really made his teeth yellow.
Mm.
But I have no idea what it was that he was chewing, but it grows naturally. And you know, it's the same thing for things like bee stings. And also, I mean, there are things growing in nature that are natural cures for things that are out there that make us uncomfortable. And,
sure.
And,
you know, willow, you could take willow bark and willow branches, rather, chop them up, put them in water, warm up a little bit and drink that, and that's natural aspirin. That's where aspirin comes from. Pine needles, again, you know, brew them up into a tea. That's a wonderful source of vitamin C. So right there, if you were sick, there would be your aspirin for your headache and a little vitamin C to help perk you up a little. A lot of us are looking at what's in our backyard. The old herbals are back in publication. People are collecting them like crazy. I have a bookshelf full of them.
My sister's a shaman, and she is a Peruvian shaman, and she, when she comes down to visit, she goes out and she looks, you know, in the yard, and she says, "You realize what you have here? You could live on what's growing wild in your backyard if you had
mm-hmm.
to." And you know, I think that I've almost got her convinced that she'll come on the show and talk about that, because, you know, the harder life gets, the rougher the economy gets, the more we're going to have to stretch backwards for this knowledge.
And you know myself that I've got the goats and the chickens, and you know, I'm convinced that we're going to need to plant gardens again, and that was a way of life not that long ago. We lost track of where our food comes from. An interesting side note to that: there was a diet made popular some years ago called the Diet of Your Ancestors. The idea being that our cells hold memory, and we
mm-hmm.
know that this is true, because water holds memory. Water is sentient. Our bodies are pretty much made up of water. And, you know, where did your ancestors, how did your ancestors eat? And not just like say, well, I'm Italian. Okay, what part of Italy was your family from? What part of Italy, and how did they eat 3, 4, 5 generations ago? Because they all pretty much ate the same once you get back to the old country. And
yeah.
the idea being that those foods were more nutritious for you and better for your body type. It went hand in glove then with the second part of that, which is the spirituality of your ancestors. How did your ancestors worship? So what I'm seeing in the store, is people coming in looking for the Pictish. If their families were from Scotland or in that area, they're looking at the Norse traditions, which are just amazing. They're going all over the world. And what is the indigenous religion of the land? And
well,
naturally,
you know, when you go way, way back, people lived by the weather, by the climate, by the earth.
They
lived
by the seasons of the year, and Wiccans still follow that. We follow the wheel of the year.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and it's seasonal.
Yeah, and you know, religion, frankly, was invented by Constantine. Truly, he made Christianity a corporation.
Yes, he did.
And you know, while the Jewish faith, you know, certainly is a lot older, and it too has a great deal of a lot of their traditions and everything were not necessarily laws that God gave them, but they were laws that they were given because of their health and because it was healthier to do some of these things.
Right, not to eat pork. Well, pork could kill you. You know, they've talked about that, you know, the diet restrictions and man-made laws versus God-given laws, and that is a big hot topic at the shop as well, you know.
Well, you know, I'm getting to the point where I'm recognizing that people who are truly spiritually oriented are definitely going back to the soil. I mean, they may not be living off of it, but they do have gardens and they are growing vegetables and they are paying greater attention to what they bring into their homes as far as pesticides and things like that. And they're being a lot more careful about what they feed their children. I mean, I'm horrified to see what some of these people feed their children.
Mm-hmm. That's right. But, you know, when the financial times are so difficult, you know, organic food is expensive. And, you know, and it's less expensive and quicker to run through McDonald's. And they think they're eating healthy because they think, well, these are chicken nuggets. I'm feeding my kid chicken. They really, you know, people, they look like chicken, taste like chicken, but, you know, we all know they're ground up chicken slop. And that's not good.
Well, I think when Patrick and I drove across country 3 years ago, we went by the slaughterhouses and the pens where they held the cattle and stuff before they were slaughtered. And I have to tell you that the smell was so outrageously repulsive that it turned me off of red meat. And
it's hard. Yeah.
And so, you know, I want to get back to Wicca because it is a fascinating topic, and it's not full of frightening things. It's full of magical, wonderful. Take for instance the pentagram. I mean, each of the points of the stars. It's air, earth, fire, water, and the ether.
Mm-hmm.
Spirit, yeah.
Yep.
So that the five points they symbolize the very foundation of everything that is.
And that had been a Christian symbol at one time, and it was in churches. And I forget which pope who moved that. China. We're just talking about this. It was a Christian symbol, and then someone decided the cross would be a more suitable symbol of the religion, and. And that was that. Well, the swastika was also a Christian symbol at one time.
Oh yeah,
you know.
But it seems to me that Wiccan holds much more truth in it.
It resonates for some the same way that Buddhism resonates for some. What I tell people to do is don't give up on your own religion right off the hop, and no one does right away. But you know, you start studying, start reading. We offer classes at the shop. There's books to read, many, many more books than ever before. And of course, we have the internet now too. But there'll be threads of things. Like many Christians find themselves drawn to the Buddhist path, and there's reason to believe that Christ spent 7 years in India. People who are drawn to, say, the Native American path. Many men are, you know, in America, there are more female witches than male because there's a stigma about the word witch attached to a male. Whereas in England, it's just the opposite. There are more male witches than female because they don't have that same stigma. You know, men want to be called warlocks or something other than witch because it has a feminine aspect here. And, you know, I'm sorry, this isn't Harry Potter, so you can't be a warlock. You're a witch if you're a witch. But...
Well, somebody in the chat room asked a question that I knew was going to come up, and they said, isn't it devil worship and against God, Jesus, and the Trinity? And I'll let you field that. I know it's not, but,
well, first
of
all, I don't know anyone in the Wiccan religion who has any dislike or distaste other than being tired of hearing that question, frankly, against Jesus or Christianity. We don't worship the devil because we don't believe in the devil. That's
mm-hmm.
a Christian invention, and we don't believe in him. So if we don't believe in the Christian devil and we don't believe in Christian hell, how can we be worshiping him?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like telling an atheist you're going to hell, and they're like, well, oh, whatever.
it doesn't mean
anything to me.
I think this is a case of something that happens quite often in our society. We get something passed down about Halloween and devils, and we all take it as gospel, and very few of us have ever. This is the very first time I ever Googled Wicca and read up on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know,
it's hard, Barbara, because I lived in the Bible Belt for a while. I lived in Oklahoma for a while, and they want to change even the yoga, to more Christian terms as opposed to the Buddhist terms, because they think that that's against Christianity. Downward facing dog becomes, I don't know what.
Oh.
People who think that having the stones or the crystals, so many of us love our stones and our crystals, and
mm-hmm.
somehow that gets translated out to it's going to allow evil in your home. And I'm not quite sure how a quartz crystal is going to do that, but I was just speaking to some people. I just made some purchases today, as a matter of fact, and the gentleman was from Brazil, but he laughed because he hears it. When you get out of the big cities, people, I can't have those stones in my home. That's not right. It's worshiping a false god. I mean, it's how that translates out.
Only education
will change that. Yeah, but it's hard. It's a tough nut to crack.
It is, and when you say Wicca and you say witch, everybody gets upset in the reality
here. When you say witch, people get upset. That's why most of us will go to and say, well, I'm Wiccan, because it's becoming more and more the norm. People, it's a very fast-growing religion right now. So it is becoming more socially accepted to say, well, I'm Wiccan. But when you say witch, yeah, people get their hindquarters up. There's no doubt about that. So a lot of us stop wearing pentacles around our neck. I wear a little bracelet normally. I'll wear a stone. A lot of people prefer the triquetra or another Irish knot,
mm-hmm.
or just a star and leave off the circle, so it's a pentagram, not a pentacle. And then you can. Well, I'm from Texas, whatever. It's a lone star. but no, really, that's what you just don't. And I gotta say too, Barbara. The other thing is, I have the store. I've been interviewed, and I'm openly a witch. But for most people, your religion, your sexuality, and your political leanings, they can be private. We don't proselytize. You're never going to find a Wiccan at your door, knocking, asking if you found the goddess. That's not going to happen. So we have no need to convert. We have no need to bring anybody. In fact, most covens are closed. Very, very tight, very, very quiet on the subject. We don't want any trouble. We don't want to make trouble, but our religion used to be celebrated during the day, during the sunshine times, out in the open. It moved to being practiced at night and wearing black. That was all protective because we had to operate secretively.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that came about. But the folk religion, the old religion, was never hidden or secreted away. And so, what was the indigenous religion of the area? Well, that Wicca has its roots there.
Well, if you had to place its origin, I think that the Native Americans, their belief system and the fact that they were so into nature and the planet.
It's absolutely a sister path. And shamanism is the oldest religion.
Mm-hmm.
that we have that dates back over 30,000. Gosh, when did it even start? Let me think here. The horn god was worshipped everywhere back when Britain was a pagan country.
And pagan meaning non-Christian.
That's right. So
okay.
All the way up to like the Middle Ages, and then the horned god became the leaf man, the green man.
Yeah.
And he's still found in churches. He's still found, and that's where, you know, this idea of satanic, you know, with the horns and that's where it came from. But it was from the horned god.
So it predates Christianity by quite a bit.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because I was looking for, you know, all right, so, you know, I can almost find a place where a lot of religions have started, and I couldn't find except Great Britain seems to be where Wiccan, you know, at least
well,
of late.
Well, Gerald Gardner began the formal, but... I am trying to think where it started. Honestly, it has its roots in shamanism, and it dates back that time with the seasons, with the moon cycles.
I mean, if you're going to go, you know, you can take it back to almost any of your pre-Christian religions, because they were all based basically on the seasons, on you know, the weather, on the earth energy. That's what was worshipped, because that was what guided their lives, and that's what people, you know, they patterned their lives through those cycles. Because they had to eat and to survive.
That's right.
So survival became
and the idea
religion.
That, you know, the sun had to be brought back. The solstices became very important. In the first religions, the first Sabbaths were done for the solstices. The idea of, you know, bringing the sun back and making sure the sun stayed, and, you know, that was the beginning of
mm-hmm.
the solstices. And then the quarter solstices. And then, of course, the rituals of fertilizing the soil, of making sure the land stayed fertile, the animals stayed fertile, the woman of the house stayed fertile. The harvests became part of the cycle, part of the circle of the year.
It's such a gentle belief system, religion.
It is. It is.
And the only dogma that I can see that is attached to it is do no evil, do no harm, do no harm.
Do no harm. And what you do comes back to you in threes. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing good things, they're going to come back to you. And if you're doing bad things, it comes back to you, which means that most Wiccans won't do anything evil, wouldn't do anything evil because, well, for one, we believe in reincarnation, we believe in karma. We may have different words for it, but it's the same thing, this idea that you come back again and you reap what you sow. But we don't want that. We don't want that attachment to someone we don't like. So if we do something bad to you, we're just strengthening that tie. And that's the last thing you want to do. You want to break those ties and move forward into another life that doesn't include pain or hurtful feelings or that kind of anger. So,
mm-hmm.
There is that gray area where we're allowed to protect ourselves too.
Mm-hmm. But basically, from what I have read, and it's you know, certainly it's not an education. It was merely just to make sure that I didn't say too many stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you work with energy. And you know, you're putting things out and getting things back. That's the law of attraction. You do what you do, even if it's in the case of a quote unquote spell. You're putting energy into something to get energy back. You're not trying to manipulate. You're trying to protect, and you're doing it energetically. So I don't see how anybody could in any way have a bad connotation to that.
The bad connotation is when you have fundamentalists who say that only this way is truth. And so, you know, where we butt heads is where someone says, well, you're not worshiping this person or this way, so you're wrong and you're going to go to hell. And of course, when you add to that the permission to harm somebody based on their religious beliefs, and when you have King James, who changed the Bible from, you know, thou shalt not allow a poisoner to live, back in the time when you had community meals and someone with poison could in fact wipe out a tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So poisoning, to have poison on you would be a reason to be put to death, and change that to thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. And you've put that in a Bible, which many people, you know, it's what they accept as the word of God. You're going to have problems. And then you have the Inquisition, and we have about 1,000 years of burnings and very painful memories. So that's where it becomes bad. That's where it comes in to play, is when someone paints you with a different brush than is the truth. But if your faith tells you that unless you believe this way, you are evil, unless you've accepted Jesus Christ as your personal savior, you are bad. That's never gonna. You can't go anywhere with that conversation. Most of us stop trying.
Yeah. Yes, I have been there myself many times.
You know very well that many that to contact the dead is also a big no-no for certain sects, S-E-C-T-S, you know, certain religious principles. That's a big no-no for many.
And yet, Jesus and the disciples did it all the time.
Exactly. Well, then Jesus did magic. It worked with energy, did healing.
Okay, that's you just brought up a word that is equated with Wicca. And that's magic. And to be honest with you, I consider myself a very spiritually oriented person, and I consider a lot of the things that I do, I call it magic, but it's only because I can't scientifically explain it, so it's magic.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting, quantum physics has bridged the gap of science and magic. And certainly magic is anytime you energetically will something to happen. That's magic.
Okay. Well, I just, it's...
So again, but what you were saying earlier, it all goes back to energy.
Yeah, it does. And
intent.
Well, yes. And I do believe that some people are able to utilize energy to a far better / greater extent than other people, and some of it is belief, and it is faith. It is knowing that if I do this, then this will happen.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that's natural to your own energetic field, and
it can be taught. You can learn it though. With the more you align yourself again with the seasons, with the moon cycles. Listen, any police officer or bartender will tell you that when the moon is full, you see more crazy people out there. You see more domestic violence. You see more loony behavior. That's where that word comes from, loony, from the moon, the lunar. Full moon and the tides affect human behavior. When you align
teacher.
Yourself. What's that?
Said I was a school teacher, yes. Full moon, crazy kids.
Crazy kids, crazy energy. So, you know, the more you align yourself with these energies, with the natural energies, the energies of color, the energies of the stones, the oils, smell has energy, taste has energy. Think of the energy of a hot pepper.
Mm-hmm.
Think of the energy of a cube of sugar. You know, or a spoonful of honey. Different energy altogether.
Definitely. And, you know, it's not rocket science. It's logical. And if people would just stop to think about it, they'd realize that you know, they have so much more control over their environment than they are than they are energetically using. And it seems, and I'm not telling people to change their faith. I'm just saying, you know, pay attention to what you have open to you, and you know, it's not a sin. It's not a sin to put intent in your actions. It's not a sin to
again, I'm going to go back to philosophy. I'm going to take it there. I'm going to say, listen, you have a philosophy of let go and let God.
Yeah.
Well, we don't Wiccans don't follow that premise. We believe in being fully accountable for our actions. There is no, we have no ability to go on a Saturday and confess our sins and be forgiven. We are accountable, and we may carry that accountability through lifetimes, so we're very careful who we cross and whom we harm and what we do. Most of us, again, don't want that kind of accountability or that karmic kickback. So we usually walk away and let it go. But when you have, again, this idea that, well, I'm not going to take it, let go and let God. God is my co-pilot. You know, put it up to Jesus. Hand it over to the Lord. We don't do that. We set an intent. We know sometimes that the answer is no. That's the other thing. Sometimes the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
But, and what you say, you know, it's logical. I also believe it's instinctive. A lot of these things come naturally to us the minute we start reading them. For many, many people, when they first open their first book on Wicca, whether it's a Scott Cunningham book or it's a Ellen Dugan book or a Raven Grimassi book, because these are wonderful authors that are writing some, Christopher Penzack, some wonderful authors out there that are writing really good stuff. And it's like, oh my gosh, you feel like you've come home. And they say that. It's like I've been doing these things instinctively most of my life. You know, children out in the garden will immediately start making little fairy houses, start talking to the flowers, resonating with the energy of the trees, talking to those nature spirits, what we call elementals.
Yeah.
And that's another energy that you align yourself with as well.
There is such a blending of philosophy between those who are walking a spiritual pathway and those who are walking a Wiccan pathway. It feels like it's the same pathway, you know, just with different seasonings here and there. But it is a more natural way of living rather than.
Well, many people prefer the term pagan. Or they'll call themselves pagan, and where pagan and Wiccan differ, pagans tend to celebrate the Sabbaths, the holidays, where Wiccans tend to spiritually or religiously ritualize them, and that's a very big difference. So pagan holidays are wonderful and they're fun, but there's not a lot of ritual involved.
Mm-hmm. Now, witches have they're gathered in. Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes they have groups and they call them covens. I'm not sure where the term coven comes from, but I am curious as to why they sort of are gravitating towards 13 people per coven.
That's, I want to say it's an old school. That's not necessarily the way things are done.
Okay.
Some people will use that number, but no, it's any group of and there's usually some are dyanic, which they're purely feminine. There are also some of the fairy tradition, which it's male. And there's others where you'll have your high priest, high priestess, who will play the part of god and goddess, or actually become god and goddess in high ritual. And the reason why you would gather in a group in perfect love, in perfect trust, such a hard thing to find, is that when you do high ritual magic as a group, where everyone is in sync and everyone has perfect trust and you have such love for your fellow coven members, is the level of energy you can raise is simply staggering. You know, Gerald Gardner famously held back the stood and he and his coven held back the Nazi forces, and they did not come into England. In ritual, they pushed them back at a time when that was what Hitler's plan was, to invade England. That did
not occur. Absolutely, yeah.
And that's written about and talked about even today. But the level of energy you can raise when you have a group of people in worship is always going to be higher than what one person can raise.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that's why people gather, and there's a huge trust factor there, you know. So it's not easy to find a group, and it's not easy to find a group where everyone will get along and ego can be held at bay because portraying the goddesses and channeling the goddess isn't the same as being the goddess, and someone needs to let let some people know that, and the god as well.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that came up is the idea of being sky-clad or nude in ritual. Gerald Gardner preferred it. Gardnerians often perform ritual naked. It's a wonderful, freeing, liberating aspect of worship, but it's also not necessary. And just as many, if not more, groups choose not to be sky-clad or naked. But the idea of a gathering of naked people, in a circle, will certainly start some stories and some tongues flying.
I like the phrase though, being sky clad. To me. Yeah, it's such a lovely way of saying naked.
And if you ever been naked or sky clad under a full moon, it's a wonderful feeling. It's a liberating, freeing feeling. And you stand as equals in circle when you're all nude versus clothed.
Well, I've never been in a circle naked with other people, but there has been the rare occasion on a full moon on a nice summer night where just standing out in the moonlight naked is really, I know it sounds strange, but I live in a place where you can do this. And
me too. I prefer that as well. So, it's an amazing feeling. It's an amazing energy, and it's a charge that can't be described. You really have to experience it.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that it's a spiritual rather than a religious experience. It's
well, I always like to say be religious about brushing your teeth, be spiritual about everything else. I mean, you know, I'd much rather look at things from a spiritual, and you live your spirituality 24/7. You know, you might be religious 1 hour a week when you go to church, but spirituality is something that's something you walk every day, every hour,
absolutely. And I find that I am noticing that people are turning away with their diets and back to food again. They're going to a more natural diet as opposed to a meat diet. Yeah, and I always used to say that highly spiritual people often become vegetarians, but becoming a vegetarian doesn't make you excessively spiritual.
It doesn't, but, you know, more and more people are realizing that especially when the energy is hideous, and when you have something that's slain and in pain and terrified for its life and listening to the death cries of other creatures, you know, that's actually in the meat, that's in the food you eat. I had a little girl. She was adorable. She came in with her sister who was autistic, and their father. And this child was 8 years old, the same as my son. But she was holding a conversation. Barbara, you would have been just amazed. This child was talking like a 30-year-old, and she said to me, "You know, when I'm older, I'm going to be a vegetarian." But not right now because I still need red meat because I'm growing. But do you know that when you eat an animal and they die and they're scared that, you know, you eat that emotion, you eat that? And I'm like, I do know that. I'm a little surprised you know that, child. And she just went on and on about energy and the stones and I'm quite sure her parents were not Wiccan. I'm quite sure her parents weren't raising her to be pagan. But what a beautiful spiritual way of looking at things.
You know, you just brought something up that I have been noticing that I am fascinated by. There is a new generation it's a generation that is moving into greater maturity now, and they came in with a greater awareness than my son did when he was born.
These little children born after the year 2000, they're coming in fully attuned. they're coming in so clairvoyant, so intuitive, so so right within themselves. And the problem is we're failing these children. We're failing. And I just wrote an article about this for the Door Opener because the summer issue is all about the magic of children. But these children cannot be educated the way we've been doing it. This dogmatic, sit in your seat, answer these questions, take this test, only a few minutes outside. And the time they spend outside is becoming less and less.
Mm-hmm.
It's not working for these children. And
no.
it doesn't really work for any child. But these kids cannot be educated that way. They're very sensitive to vaccinations. They're very sensitive to chemicals. You know, and this is our new little generation. These are our little new agers.
Well, I got to tell you, I taught special ed for 25 years, and it was very good to me. But in looking back, I think that what special education is doing for 99% of the kids is labeling them and hindering them and in many ways restricting them from having a full, rich life. And it's also in many ways handicapping the other children who now don't have the opportunity of learning compassion, understanding, and empathy for some that aren't able to do the same thing that others do.
So, well, I'm going to enjoy the time when we finally wake up as a society and say, why are there so many children with these allergies? Why are there so many children with these labels? And the reason for the labels is, of course, that they have to be labeled in order for the insurance company to cover their medications and their treatments. So there has to be a label given to the child, or there can be no treatment given to the child. But how many Asperger's children do you know growing up? On my street alone, on my street where I live in Huntington, my neighbor's son is fully autistic, what you'd call lower functioning, can't speak. Down the way, two houses down, they have two children, one of whom is prone to seizures. The other has a disorder where he's pretty much in a wheelchair, can't walk. And then there's another autistic child a little bit further down from that. That's on one street. The numbers are skyrocketing, and I think, and we're really off topic, I know, but
no, that's okay.
But why are we, you know, why are we okay with this? Why aren't we asking hard questions, saying what is in the food, what's in the cleaning, what's in the vaccination, what the hell's going on?
Oh, I totally agree with you. And the more I see, I have a neighbor whose son clearly needs help, but not medication. He needs to be helped emotionally, and they would rather give this kid drugs rather than spend time with him and help him to understand, you know, what is right, what is wrong. And
well, I mean,
and
you and I are on the same page with certain aspects of, well, I shouldn't drag you into this, but in terms of the family unit's been torn apart. It continues to be assaulted. We have a generation of young women. You know, I have four children. My older children help change the diapers of the younger children. My girls have changed diapers. They have, because I was home with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a generation of young women who have never had to care for a younger sibling. And so this idea of institutionalized child care, which is frightening, but it's what it's become. This idea of the government being able to tell us that we have to vaccinate, we have to give flu shots. They're giving flu shots younger and younger to these children. They have to be given not just regular vaccinations, but there's so much more they're being given, and it doesn't stop. And if you look at a study of what children were given back in the 1970s compared to what they're given now, it's like three times the number of injections that they're given, and they're given them so close together that if their immune system is compromised in any way, you know, we're seeing these kids go into this autistic pattern at 18 months.
No, it's wrong.
It's wrong. And so the part of waking up, there isn't time, you know, to wait. There isn't time to wait while we allow Monsanto to take over our food and continue making it toxic. There isn't time to wait for another nuclear reactor to fail so more radiation can pour into our ocean. There isn't time to wait as species become extinct. And this is where the warrior aspect, the environmental warrior, comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not going to be quiet. We're not going to be, you know, cowed. We're going to occupy. We're going to speak up. And we're going to begin living our truth.
Well, you know, in one of the articles that I read, it spoke about how the numbers of Wicca are not that great. There aren't that many. There are
there's plenty. We don't talk about it. No, they're not reported. Actually, the fastest growing religions. But we don't meet publicly because there's no Church of Wicca where we're all attending. They can't keep count of us. We're okay with that. Let me just say, I'll speak on behalf of my brothers and sisters in the craft. We're cool with that. It's okay that you don't know how many of us there are.
It's just in the chat room. One of the people is saying that her sister's Wicca, and she's been working hard a long time to forgive her. I think a person's, as you said earlier, a person's religious spiritual preferences is a very private thing.
Yeah.
And I think that you know, no matter what it is, even if, you know, I mean there's an author out there whose name is now escaping me, but he just passed away. The 12 planet guy, Zachariah Sitchin, and people hit, now he was a science fiction author, and he wrote science fiction, but people have taken his books and they are now quoting them like they quote the Bible,
it's
absolute. But the thing is, they have a right to do that.
Well, the same thing happens in Wicca, the Avalonian myths. A lot of things that were myths became translated as truth, and that's one of the things that's been taught at Talisman. There's a Wicca University class taught once a year by the Circle of the Sacred Well, and we talk more about, well, what's myth, what's folklore, and then what's spiritual truth. So that's, you're right, that's interesting. And a lot of what the folklore was brought about, just common sense. There was something, I was reading a witchcraft book, and it said, witches never bring an old broom into a new house. Well, I heard that growing up from my grandmother when I would move from apartment to apartment. You know, you get rid of your broom, get rid of all your cleaning supplies, because you don't bring dirty things into a clean house.
Well, that makes perfect sense.
In the day when you had dirt floors and bugs, you moved, often you moved, you built a new house to escape the vermin and you know, the lice and what have you that were permeated the place. So,
yes,
of course you kept all your cleaning things there when you moved into someplace new. So that wasn't about witchcraft. That wasn't about folklore. That was or folk magic. That was just common sense.
Yeah, but you know, if you put a tradition to it, if you put I think they were just trying to make people to pay attention. So they made it, you know, this is what, you know, it said that if. And that whole thing of, you know, it's tradition for this and it's tradition for that. And you know, traditions have become, like you said, folklore, and folklore has become, you know, stronger, and then suddenly it becomes a belief.
Folklore is dogma, but it's not dogma, and it shouldn't be treated as such. And a lot of what we talk about at the shop is trying to help people understand that what they think. There's a lot of pagans and Wiccans out there, and I'm very disjointed. I'm sorry, it's been a long day, but. You know, don't really know what they're worshiping. They don't really know. Just like the Occupy movement, there were people out there in the Occupy movement, and when the camera got thrust in their face, I cringed, because like, well, why are you here? And they're like, we hate the banksters. That's not why we're here. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not why you're camped out there, and that's not why you're occupying the space.
A lot of them were doing it because it was a group thing, and they were just, you know, lemmings kind of going along with everybody else, and it looked like fun. And
right.
I don't think they understand the purpose behind stuff like that.
And of course, people, you know, watch a movie like The Craft, or they see Harry Potter, and they think, well, this is cool, and they get a pentacle, and they think that, you know, well, here you go, I'm wearing the pentacle. Well, that doesn't make you any more of a witch than wearing a cross makes you a Christian.
Absolutely not.
You know, go stand in the garage, and it's going to make you a car. I mean, you know, what you wear, it doesn't make who you is and what you are. And then it goes back to what resonates for you, what is your truth. And then, of course, there is an education. So there is an education. There is a year and a day. There is a time where you study and dedicate yourself, and then take this on as to wear your robe, so to speak. If this is what you really want to be, if this is really your truth. And a lot of times you say, well, no, you know, maybe this isn't quite my truth, or, you know, this path isn't working for me, but this does. Again, you have to study. You can't just, it's not something you can watch a movie or read one book and say, oh, okay, here I go, I'm here. Not quite.
I think that those of us who are spiritually oriented have most probably tried on so many different hats as far as, you know, what is my own personal belief system and how do I honor it and how do I walk my faith, my inner faith, my truth, not somebody else's, not some building that is preaching to me, but my inner faith that I brought into this lifetime. And I think people today are searching more for their own inner faith rather than looking for one that is ready-made and slapped in front of them, and they're told, you know, you do this, 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 and this, and then you go to heaven. And you know, I just look at people and say, everybody goes. It does, you know, you don't have to buy your ticket to get in.
That goes against the grain for so many people because they want to believe that Adolf Hitler is burning in hell. They want to believe that you know, like they're going to turn the other cheek in this life. But let me tell you, that's only because God is going to really mess those people up. You know, so what are you telling me? Wait, what? You're saying that they're not going to go to hell and burn forever and ever? Wow. Well, that's not fair.
Well, but wait. I'm
being very sarcastic, Barbara.
No, I gotcha. I had someone who wronged me terribly a lot of years ago, and somebody said to me, you know, do you want us to break his legs for you? And I said, no, I'm going to take care of this myself. Just leave him alone. And about 6 months later, a couple of his family members came to me and said, you know, we're all holding our breath. You're not going to kill him, are you? And I said, no, I'm not. but I am going to make sure that I do not stand in the way of the justice that he will call down upon himself. And they looked at me and they said, so what are you going to do? And I said, get out of the way. And
sometimes the worst punishment we can give somebody that's wronged us is simply remove ourselves from their lives.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I did that.
Absolutely.
But I just, you know, and I said, you know, what goes around comes around. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that. And rather than try to, you know, hurry something or make it worse than you know, whatever, I'm just going to get out of the way because I really know that what will be coming back is far, far worse than anything that I could even, you know, think of pushing on that person.
But I was talking to someone on a Facebook chat, and they said, well, and again, someone who had been wronged, very badly wronged them, and said, well, I can't wait to watch karma kick their ass. Now, you'd be waiting a long time because karma takes lifetimes.
Oh, yeah.
So just because something bad happened in this lifetime to you doesn't mean that they're going to receive their punishment or receive their karmic due, you know? Reincarnate, you know, it doesn't, yeah, right, exactly.
Wanting to see it happen is a natural human quality, I'm afraid, or it's natural for me. But knowing that what goes around does come around, it does give me a great deal of peace knowing that you know, maybe there was something I needed to learn from the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, and of a positive nature, and I think that's the other thing that I believe, that no matter what it is that is called into your life, there is something very positive there for you to gather from it. And once you gather that positive seed of whatever, then actually you can move on, because the point of the lesson is now no longer there.
Right, and you know, unfortunately, the things we learn from, we don't learn from the things we do correctly. We learn from our mistakes.
Yeah,
and the more painful the mistake, the greater the lesson. But that's tough. You know, but if we never did anything wrong, if we never made any mistakes, you know, so the idea most of us, right, and most pagans believe that we chose these people to come into our lives. We actually
mm-hmm.
picked them out, and that's tough too, because then it goes back to accountability, and people don't want to say, well, what do you mean I chose that person to come in and marry me, then cheat on me and ruin my life?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's silly. No, you probably did. Believe it or not, you probably did. Sadly.
And you know, I think that there absolutely is accountability, because we do come into this lifetime having requested circumstances that would enable us to grow in certain ways. And I don't think that we specifically, you know, had the ability to ask how we learned those lessons, because if I really had that opportunity, I probably would have been a little easier on myself.
Yep.
But the reality here is that you know, we do these things. This is the purpose for us down here, is to grow, is to learn, is to become better people. And the only way we learn that, unfortunately, it seems to be part of the human condition that unless we feel the pain, we don't know we've learned something.
I agree.
It would be nice if humanity got to a point where we could just giggle when we learned, but you know, somehow I'm not sure that would...
I think we do more of that on the other side. I think we do more laughing on the other side, and hopefully at some point, yes, below is as above below.
Right.
But we're not there yet. We definitely are not there yet, unfortunately.
Well, you know, I'm so glad that there is... A greater easement as far as you know, people who have a different faith and religion, because you know it. I'm not saying it's easy, because I know it's not, but there is a greater sense of empathy and compassion in a majority of the people today than there was 20 years ago. Because
yeah.
20 years ago, if I had let it be known that I was a psychic, or that I had a more spiritual orientation than religious orientation, I would have lost my job.
Yeah, you're right. And 10 years ago, if you talked about doing Reiki or getting a acupressure treatment, people would look at you like, what? And now
exactly.
Those words are part of the language vernacular. We discuss those things readily, without fear of retribution or punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there are still some places where you really want to be quiet about some of your practices, depending on who your boss is. But that's true of your sexuality. Again, that goes back to your political leanings, too. That's why we keep those things private.
Yeah.
A lot of times I find myself counseling women, bring their daughters in, their teen daughters, and say, you know, you have to talk to my daughter. They know I've got four kids. They know that I, you know, my daughter wants to wear a pentacle, and my husband is simply so opposed to it. And I said, but do you know why he's opposed? And they're like, well, you know, I said, he's opposed because he's trying to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, honey, most of us really don't wear a great big pentacle around our neck. And again, we don't do that because we don't want to draw attention. And I'm not afraid to wear a pentacle. I do wear a pentacle sometimes. But for a 16 or a 15-year-old girl, by herself, makes you a target.
Oh,
you don't
yeah.
want a grown man reaching over, grabbing your neck and saying, what's this devil symbol you're wearing? And you've got no one there to protect or speak up for you.
Yeah.
They wouldn't dare touch me like that, but they might touch you. And that's what your father's afraid of, honey.
Well,
and
not
so
only that, but she probably doesn't have the education to even explain why.
No, but even if she does, you can't talk over some of these people. And so that's and that is what, getting back to some fundamental differences, that's one of them is, you know, you can't talk louder than the other guy. You know, the pro-choice, pro-life movement. The other side talks louder sometimes and gets uglier, and then you can't have a dialogue. You know, basically, pagans and Christians differ on two big principles, and they're found in the Bible, in the first book and the last book. In the first book, in the book of Genesis, it talks about the fact that, you know, man was given dominion over the earth. Dominion over the earth. We're pagans. Then that includes, you know, Wiccans, Native Americans, Buddhists, Hindus tend to believe we work in tandem with nature.
Mm-hmm.
We're caretakers of this earth. We've not been given dominion over it. It's not okay to torture or hurt animals. It's not okay to use up resources that don't belong to us or use up more just because we can afford it. You know, you drive a Hummer because you can afford it, but that doesn't mean you should be using up, you know, conspicuous consumption in that way. It's simply not right. It's another form of greed. Now, and you get back to Revelations, which talks about the end of the world coming. And again, we don't believe in the end of the world. We believe in the end of a way of life.
Right.
And most pagans, and actually many, many spiritualists in general, most, if not all spiritualists, and that includes mystic Christians. I don't want anyone to think that I'm attacking Christianity, because I'm not. I was a practicing Catholic for years. My beliefs arose simultaneously around 16. Mary worship was always very important to me from the time I was a very little girl. That's where I worshipped. You know, I worshipped in front of Mary,
mm-hmm.
who then became the goddess, and then that all opened up for me in a different way. But don't think for one second that I don't want anyone to think I'm attacking Christians. And in fact, most of my patrons at Talisman are what they'd call mystic Christians, people who follow the path of the Christ, a beautiful
mm-hmm.
path. Wish more Christians followed it. Because the behavior just isn't what something that Jesus would ever condone or do when you take the time to read about the man. But they're open to divination, past life recall, energy work, all those things. So don't think that just because someone's a Christian they can't be part of this world. Nothing could be further from the truth. It's an inclusive, you know, that the New Ageism is an inclusive spiritual practice.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, be clear. I mean, I just want your listeners to be clear about that. But this idea of an end of a world and a destructive, and the problem with that, Barbara, is you had people like, oh God, what's her name? My goodness, ran with George McCain. I'm sorry, who was his running mate? Sarah Palin. Thank you. You know, talking about it, and she talked about it, and others did too. That, you know, it didn't matter how much, you know, you used up. It didn't matter if you polluted the groundwater or the pristine bay where the beluga whales mate. It didn't matter because the revelation was coming. You know,
mm-hmm.
the trials, tribulations, it was all going to be destroyed and redone. So fundamentalist Christians, not only do they believe that they have this sense of, you know, ownership of the earth, but then it's also a matter of, well, it's all going to get ruined anyway, so why not piss on it some more? Why worry about it? Why not use up all the oil? Suck it all dry. What does it matter?
There is a group of Christians, and I'm not exactly sure what they call themselves these days, but they believe that in order for revelations to happen, that the earth has to be destroyed in order for it to happen. And so they are doing everything they can to pollute the environment.
We're doing a pretty good job without them. but, yeah, this...
No, it's frightening. It really is. And you know, it's sort of, you know, I talked at the beginning of the show how the show was a very, very small oasis in this confusion and creation, the confusion and evolution that we're a part of. And you know, to be honest with you, I mean, my house, my garden is for me an oasis. And people don't come into my part of it, to my part of the world, and destroy. And they don't come in, and they don't in any way spread garbage, as far as I'm concerned. And I think that more and more people are creating their own oasis, their own sanctuary that you know they are comfortable in.
You're right. I'm just now looking at your chat feed here, talking about unconditional love and not judging, and that's interesting stuff here.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is a part of I always get a great chat room, so there is. Love out there. There is empathy out there. There is compassion out there. And unfortunately, its voice is not as loud as all the other voices.
No, it's not. And, you know, it's something I'm looking at your chat room, like, I'm looking at this, you were talking about the woman being angry with the sister who's a witch, but she's a power witch. And that's interesting. We talk about people wearing the pentacle, and a lot of them wear the pentacle because it inspires fear. And they equate that with respect, and I have a real problem with that. It's one of the reasons why I don't wear very often my pentacle, and I have several, because I don't want people looking at me like, ooh, what are you gonna do? You know, that word power is a real problem. It's all ego. When someone talks about being a powerful anything, a powerful shaman, a powerful healer, I don't even like the word master. I was just talking about that earlier to people. Master. Reiki master or master gardener, you know, the master gardener program. Well, you took a 4-month class and answered some calls, and now you're a master gardener? Really, a master? Really? In 4 months, you're a master. Or you took how many Reiki classes and you became a Reiki master.
Well, often those titles are paid for. It's like a master's degree. I have two of them, but I paid for them. And it didn't make me any better a person.
Well, and that's funny because my kids were talking about, well, when you go to Yale, you're smart. I'm like, honey, I said, anyone with $60,000 a year to blow on their education can go to Yale.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have the tuition, you can go. Your brains don't have anything to do with it.
Not a thing. I know PhDs, truly, and I say it often, I know PhDs that can't tie their shoes.
I worked for PhDs who are functional literates. I was executive assistant in an office, and I wrote and typed and did all their correspondence, and they couldn't string three sentences together. But they had their PhDs or their master's degrees. It's pretty amazing stuff. So, equating that to spirituality, you know, when you have to be really careful who you're putting your faith and your trust in, do your homework.
Mm-hmm.
When someone comes across as a teacher, I want to teach you, I want to find out what gives them those credentials. How many years have they been practicing? Ask yourself what good they've done. The Circle of Sacred Well that meets at Talisman, and they serve food at the local soup kitchen. They're very involved in animal activism. Find out what they do in the community. Find out what their community standing is. You know, in Native American traditions, that's how they used to pick their leaders, was the poorest person who gave away most of their money to people in need was determined to be the most apt to be the best leader.
Well, you know, and I think also it's a case of, you know, it's not something that should be publicized. It should be something that's done, you know, quietly, unconditionally. And
you're right, but sometimes people want to learn more, and they want to learn more in that group dynamic, which is understandable.
Yeah.
And that's where people can also get in trouble, because you can become victimized in any religion. That can happen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Catholic Church has gone under fire a lot for the priest's behavior in some instances. Now, my brother was an altar boy, and my mother used to type the church bulletin. Let me tell you, that didn't happen in our little church in California, you know, our little Mexican church that we belong to.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, a few very bad people, you know, did some very bad things and then we're hidden, all the terrible things that happened. But that happens in every religion. So, you know, it, it, it's it's very well hidden in the Jewish faith. One of my bosses was Jewish, and she said, "Laura, we have rabbis that we know, you know, that were abusing children." I mean, it happens in the Jewish faith as well, but because they're seen as being high holy people, they're protected for some reason, and that happens in the pagan religion too.
Well, it happens in, you know, any of this. It happens in any organization where people are, quote unquote, worshipped or held on pedestals.
That's
and
right.
And it's, you know, for me, it a pedestal is only something to fall off of. And
right. So in terms of this group, I would caution anybody when someone presents themselves as a high priest or high priestess, find out what their credentials are.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's the same. It's the same for psychics. It's the same for, you know, if someone is telling you how masterful they are or how powerful they are, please walk away.
The psychic one-upmanship. Yeah, that's, and you know, we have readers at Talisman. I've been reading for over 25 years. But yeah, it's, and I sit with mine, and I've often said, listen, I've yet to see anyone cure cancer, bring about world peace, or solve world hunger from a psychic reading. So
no.
Put it into perspective. Put these gifts. Gifts are given. Gifts are taken away.
Yeah.
Ego's got no place with that. Someone on your chat was talking about prayer, and you know, prayer is magic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The power of prayer is huge. Prayer helps more than you'll ever know. Someone, Texas Pearl, just wrote this.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the truth. Prayer is magic. It's funny, the thing about the spells and casting spells, you know, you don't order or boss around the god and goddess. It's a request, and requests can be denied.
Absolutely.
Sometimes the best answer you can get is no. Sometimes the answer that will save your life is no.
Mm-hmm.
Not time, not going to happen. You're not ready. No. No. So people say, well, that didn't work. Well, maybe it worked just fine, but the answer was no.
Well, and yeah, somebody said, you know, that they had prayed for something over and over and over again for years and years and years, and they never got an answer, and the quiet reply was, you got an answer. The answer was no.
Yep. So people will come in and they'll say, well, I want to do a candle, and they want to come back and do another candle. I said, well, do candle. The reason I know, I'm famous for really hating The Secret. I'm an outspoken hater of The Secret. and I understand the idea of a vision board. I get it. I think that's cute. That's a nice idea. Put together a board of all the things you want, or, you know, that's sweet. But you ask once, and someone said, well, you know, it's how you ask and how often you ask and how badly you want it. And if you didn't get it, you didn't ask often enough. I'm like, well, that's called nagging. and as a mother, when my kid doesn't stop nagging me about something, they definitely don't get it. You know, that's not happening. You know, you ask once, pray for something, pray fervently, pray honestly. And a lot of times, the other thing, two things that have been ignored in this society is the act of sacrifice. What are you going to give up if you get that? What are you going to offer? What are you giving back? And people will pray and pray, and I want this and I want that. And if I get this, what will you give up? What's your sacrifice? What are you willing to do for that if you get that? Someone said, well, they really need something to happen. It's a legal issue. I said, when you pray, make it clear that if this goes your way, and I believe it should go your way because you're right, what are you going to do? You're going to bring pizza to a homeless shelter every Monday for a month or two? Pick something. Pick a sum of money that you're going to give it to a charity. You know,
that's
it's not about
point.
Making a deal. It's not about making a deal with God. But there's a reason why there's fasting is a very spiritual thing, to fast. And that's a lost art. But this idea of sacrifice and fasting and going into silent meditations or times of silence where you simply don't talk for a day or two,
mm-hmm.
allow yourself time. People say, well, I meditate, it doesn't work. And most of us don't have time to spend an entire day in meditation. But, you know, you could turn off the TV for a Saturday and go out and be outside in the woods and not speak and not be and leave your cell phone home and really become one with nature. You could
do
that.
Those moments of silence are really quite profound.
Well, one of the biggest complaints I hear from people is, "Well, I've been praying, and I've been doing work, and I've been, you know, and I can't get my spirit guide to contact me, or my angels aren't speaking to me, or you know, I can't get a message, or it's like, do you ever shut up? Do you ever stop talking? Do you ever let them speak?
Isn't meditation listening?
So I always thought, but people have a very hard time quieting their mind. And, well, is your cell phone off? Is your TV off? Is your house unplugged?
Well, you know, I have found lately I've been getting a lot of people coming to me who have recently lost somebody. Usually it's the older ladies, but they keep saying, "I've been praying to them. And you know, I've done, you know, 100 Our Fathers, 100 Hail Marys." And I just kind of look at them and say, why? Why don't you just talk to them?
Right.
I mean, it's a matter of so many people have been taught something that doesn't have any effect, and I don't understand why. You know, I'm just, you know, I'm clueless. The aspect of death, of moving into another dimension, of crossing the veil, of moving to the other side, of passing over, blending in the light, dying. It has been veiled in mystery and made almost frightening for generations,
mm-hmm.
centuries, and I don't understand why. It's, first of all, it's natural. Everybody
mm-hmm.
does it.
but not only death, though, Barbara, but sex has also been treated in that way. All sorts of otherwise natural phenomena. Breastfeeding had its moments where, you know, it had to be kept covered up and shamed and don't do that publicly. Look at just that alone. Death
mm-hmm.
is the big mystery, but it's also the great equalizer. We all have to die.
Yes. It's the only way to get to the other side.
It's the only way to get there. But the idea that there has to be a heaven and a hell, there has to be a bad place for the bad people to go, those are hard concepts to leave behind and say, well, maybe there isn't just a bad place per se. Maybe there's just a place where people figure out why they did what they did before they move on. I mean, we don't know. We can't fully reckon it because we haven't died.
Well, that at least not consciously. But I think that and the fact that people think there is judgment. And not only I don't believe there is judgment on the other side, and I don't think there should be judgment here on this earth either. I don't think we should sit in judgment of another person. I don't think that's fair, and I don't think that's right. I do understand people break the rules and they do horrible things to other people, and in those cases, yes, there has to be some form of judgment. But we shouldn't judge one another as far as friendships go. We shouldn't judge one another as far as even political or religious or sexual beliefs go, because we have no right to sit in judgment of another human being.
No,
and that's just,
we
that's
don't.
Just me.
We don't. But I have to say, too, sometimes the topic when we talk about judgment and being persecuted, I've never been persecuted as a Wiccan. I want to make that really clear. I've never had anyone come in the store and say anything negative to me about my beliefs or about my shop. I've never been out in public and had someone say to me, you know, you're going to hell, right? That has simply never happened to me. So I want to be clear that I say these things, I hear the stories, I talk to people who very much it has happened to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've really bad things have happened. People have been disowned by their families. People have had the neighbors call the police on them when they try to do ritual in their own backyard. People have been accused of doing things that no Wiccan is going to kill an animal. We tend to be vegetarians for that reason. I'm not a vegetarian, so I have to say. I try to be conscious of the meat that I eat, but I'm not a vegetarian. Many, many Wiccans are, however.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is, just because I haven't experienced it doesn't mean this doesn't happen. But I think the reason why I haven't experienced persecution is because I do keep my beliefs quiet. I guess I'm not an aggressive Wiccan. Is that the right word for it? Is there a way to be an aggressive Christian or an aggressive? I guess there is, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, there's a way of being an aggressive Christian, yes.
Or an aggressive Muslim. We know Muslims are usually peaceful people. And yeah,
they are.
And yet we find this sex or different groups that certainly are not anything even remotely close to being peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's the way we want to live and the image we want to give people. Do you want people to be afraid of you? Do you want people to be afraid of what you're going to do to them if they cross you or make you angry? Then maybe Wicca is not the religion for you. You know, there's that too. Maybe that's not what you need.
Well, I think happily we are at a time where to a certain extent there is greater freedom of religion than there has been in a very long time, and I won't say that there is understanding or even acceptance in some circles, because there's not. But for the most part, so long as you're not shoving it in people's faces, you know, they don't really care.
No, they don't. I really, at least not where we are. And I had biracial couple friends, okay, who have
mm-hmm.
said, listen, we're not stupid. We wouldn't go driving through, you know, Mississippi, you know, swampland. We just wouldn't. We choose to live in the Northeast. Go to Europe, there's just no issue whatsoever. But you can be angry about that fact. You can just say, I'm not going to say I'm accepting of it, but there are parts of the world where it's more acceptable than it is in others.
Oh yeah.
And live accordingly. And I guess when I look at relocating, I'd love to relocate. I talk about moving. I'll move someplace that's pagan friendly. You're not going to find me living in the Bible Belt.
I just
wouldn't do that to myself.
For my children, who are also being raised pagan. What areas of the country are more pagan-friendly than here?
Any area of Sedona, Arizona, New Mexico, California.
Mm-hmm.
New England, Vermont is very pagan-friendly. Maine, parts of Maine.
I find that in looking for vendors for the fair that I'm doing in September, I am finding a lot of people in further northeast than Connecticut that are coming to fairs that are bringing organic honey and organic
mm-hmm.
you know, jellies and organic, and it's sort of like, and they're from Maine and they're from Vermont and
mm-hmm.
they, you know, it's kind of like, you know, they're bringing a purer form of food to us. And when you get down to it, so much of our food has been genetically changed, switched, and manipulated. It's a wonder. The lady where I get my flowers, somebody gave her some tomato seeds from a species of tomato that has been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. This tomato is larger than normal, and it grows shaped as a heart.
Aww.
And it hasn't been genetically touched and everything, and she's going to plant them this year, and then I'll get my hands on some of the seeds next year. But because the government is restricting so much, we're having to really look for, find, and hoard seeds
mm-hmm.
that haven't been genetically touched by the government.
And it's becoming, and even if they've not been touched because of seed blow, you know, cross-pollination. If your neighbor's got genetically altered tomatoes and the bees bring the pollen over, those heirloom plants aren't heirloom anymore.
Oh, that's scary.
That's the bigger issue. And that's what Monsanto's counting on. And then when you plant those seeds, they say, well, you can't just plant them. Well, plus, if they even will grow, because they're mostly mules, they're like, well, you owe us money. Those are our plants. It's bad on many levels.
Well, it is frightening. And you know, there used to be, I don't know how many different kinds of potatoes that you could buy, and now there are only three or four.
That's the truth of our meats, though. You know, we have one meat cow. We have one meat chicken. That's the leghorn. We have the heirloom chickens. You know, and I have chickens myself. But a lot of the breeds, and they were area specific. So like Rhode Island Reds, Delawares. These are chicken breeds. New Hampshire Reds, and they were chickens who over time had grown for the land, for the weather. You know, you have Key West chickens. They're thinner. They're taller. They have less feathers. They're not there because they can take the heat. You know, and then you've got the chickens that grow that live and thrive in the cold weather, and they're fatter, they're rounder, they're fluffier, because they have like little down jackets on. And my chickens don't need heat in their coops because I have chickens that are in the area for this area. When you have just one species, well, what happened to the Irish when all they grew was potatoes? Hello, that's not a good idea. Monoculture is not the way to go. And there's a disaster waiting to happen. Hereford cattle for beef. You got Jersey cows for milk. What about all? I mean, and you see we have species of domestic animals dying out. Never mind our wild animals that are going extinct. We have domestic animals that are going extinct.
Yeah, it is frightening. And I've noticed the bees are not as prolific as once they were.
People want to know the best thing they can do for the planet, and I talk about this all the time in the shop, just stop putting down the fertilizers on your soil. Before you put anything on the ground or in the ground, look at the label. If you can't walk on it as soon as you put it down, it's not organic. If there's any danger in that, it's not organic. If you have to put the little signs up, it's not organic. Okay? You know,
it's
go get yourself get a bag of cow manure. Go get yourself some chicken or some rabbit manure, goat manure. That's organic. Malorganite, that's organic.
No, I put organic on my gardens. And the other thing too, and kind of, you know, coming full circle back, there's this wonderful little book out there, and it's a little book. It's called Earthing. And it talks about how we should be walking barefoot on the earth because the earth has a certain energy that will synchronize with ours, and if we synchronize our energy with the earth energy by walking barefoot on it, that actually the earth energy will diminish inflammation and all sorts of other stuff. And we've so isolated ourselves, we've taken ourselves away from, you know, having contact with the earth, with our shoes, with tires, with pavement, with concrete, that we aren't in touch with the earth energy anymore at all. And it's sad.
And yet it's still there because the ley lines are still there, very much there. You could speak about that. You could do a whole show on that topic, Barbara. But, you know, the ley lines are still there. We can still tap into that energy the minute we make a conscious effort to do so. Subconsciously, we crave it.
Oh, yeah.
And they just did a study that talks about the healing properties of hugging trees. Most of us knew, you know, have known that go out and hugging a tree, putting your arms around a tree and wrapping yourself around that tree, and the energy it pulls out of you, the negativity it pulls out, it's wonderful.
Oh, it's astounding,
yeah. But now they've done studies, and it does absolutely lower your blood pressure. It is good for you. Just hug a tree. It's that simple. Go barefoot. Walk barefoot.
Oh, yeah.
Get your hands dirty in the garden. You know, go bask naked under a full moon. Go throw yourself into the ocean.
These are all just
acts of love. They're acts of worship, actually.
Well, and I think it's abandonment, and I think that's something that you know is important, and there should be more of it, and especially when you're working with nature. I think the most I have experienced some amazing moments in my life, and I think I never felt so absolutely awestruck as when I was at the wheel of a 140-foot square rigger in the Atlantic Ocean, and they opened the squares, and you felt the wind take that huge heavy ship and just cut it through the water, mm-hmm. and it was you feel so small, you feel so. So teeny. It's just it's unbelievable. And while I'm mentioning this, I think the other thing I want to mention is there is a wonderful movie out there, and if you go to my website on the page that's marked videos, it's the direct link is there. It's a video called Home, and if you've never seen it, you should watch it. It talks about you should have an hour and a half where you can just sit there and be awestruck. It talks about the Earth and the planet, and it talks about what is still available and how we haven't, you know, destroyed it totally, and how it is the most beautifully done movie I have ever seen, and the visuals are just spectacular.
I'll be on there. That sounds amazing. There's been more and more of that coming out, though. You know, more and more of these wonderful shows on Discovery Channel and on Animal Planet that's exploring the depth and breadth of this amazing planet we live on. My son just made the trip out west, and he chose to go by bus, and it was one of those crazy Mr. Toad's Wild Ride because this was just last week. He got to Colorado, and there was a freak blizzard. So the bus got waylaid and went south. So my best mm-hmm. friend called me and said, you know, Kim said, Laura, you know, Derek's in Mexico. I said, he means me New Mexico. She goes, no, he's in Mexico. He just wrote on Facebook that he crossed the border for 50 cents with some other guys from the bus. And, of course, getting back without a passport was a little more challenging. he got a serious drug search there.
I bet he did.
But and then he went up the California coastline, and he said, you know, Mom, what's really funny is, so the trip ended up taking 2 days longer than it was supposed to, and then because there were no transit buses to get him from the big city he wound up in Northern California up to the even tiny little western town he was going to up way up in the corner of California there, he had to stay a weekend in a hotel. But he said, you know, Mom, that bus ride took me end up every place I had wanted to see, I wound up going through. Right down to going into Mexico, and so that's magic. To me, that's magic.
Oh, it is.
When you set the intent and saying I'd love when he was looking at the trip out and he was thinking to himself, he didn't tell me this. Boy, I'd love to see Arizona. I'd love to get down because the trip basically took him, you know, straight across because Connecticut up to almost Oregon is an northern mm-hmm. trip. But he's like, boy, I would have loved to have seen parts of Texas. I would have loved to have seen, you know. And he went through all those places he thought he wanted to see. He actually got to go through them and up the California coastline.
Oh, that's supposed to be phenomenal.
And to me, that's synchronicity. That's when mm-hmm. that's all it takes to say, gee, you know, I've really been looking forward to this for so long, but wow, I wish I could. And that's when you know that the God Goddess answers and says, okay, you know, you deserve this.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you want. This is what you're going to get. Sometimes, you know, that's a little bit of a. Sometimes that can be, you know, a double-edged sword. But but in this case, it was a lovely thing, you know, where he actually had these ethically long layovers when drivers got lost or drivers didn't show up to take over. You know, he 6 hours in this place, 6 hours in that place. But he got to talk to people longer than you normally would, getting in and out of a bus in a half an hour. And he got to see people all over the country and really see how beautiful this land is.
I drove across coming the other direction with Patrick 3 years ago, and it was amazing. I just had no idea at how vast this country truly
is. I've done the trip. Every American, everyone in this country should take that trip. You should see this country by car, by vehicle, and see the landscape, see what this is. If you've never left the East Coast or you've never left any, you should see how vastly beautiful and how amazing the American people are. You know, our dialects change, our diets change, the clothing changes, the styles, the colors of the buildings, the architectural styles, the landscape changes, the animals you see out in the fields. It's phenomenal. It's a phenomenal thing.
And I think that one of the things that I was so impressed with were the windmills that are all over the place.
Oh,
and they're huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed a truck that was carrying just one of the blades for one of the windmills, and those blades are at least, I'd say they were a good 25 yards long.
Well, you know, they have areas where there's fields of them. You know, in China, ironically, that's a country where they've got some of the worst pollution, some of the worst human rights violations, and yet they're also doing some of the most amazing innovations in terms of the green movement. And they have solar fields where all, as far as the eye can see, all you see is solar panels. You know, there's wind turbine fields. Where they and they're all lined up so perfectly. They're actually quite beautiful to look at.
Oh, yeah.
We're getting back to the idea of worshiping of the earth or reverence for the earth and reverence for the divine as manifested therein. And that's basically the premise of the religion.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I really believe and certainly go along with you on the fact that it's not a religion as much as it is a way of life.
Agreed.
And you know, you can call it a religion, you can label it anything you like, but if it has not become a way of life, then it's something ritualistic that you're doing to please someone else and not yourself because
it rings hollow. It just rings hollow. It's
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I can remember sitting in the spiritualist church and seeing all of the I called them, and it's irreverent, and I apologize, and I'll suffer for it someplace. But I used to call them the front row biddies. These were the rich widows that sat there with their arms crossed, and they expected you to give them a message from someone who had passed over, and they bought the church, so they felt they were entitled.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me was, you know, this is not right. and so, you know, I think that was the very beginning of my thing on I'm living my faith. I'm not practicing it. I'm living it, and there's a difference. And it doesn't matter what your religion is, so long as you are living your inner faith, you're spiritually oriented.
And I think what I'm seeing. Well, I know what I'm seeing in the store, and that is as people lose their barometer, as institutions continue to fail. The banking institution, the financial institution, the educational institution, the pharmaceutical, the medical, they're failing. They're failing the people, they're failing, the answers aren't there. People are grounding themselves and saying, where is my center? Where is my belief system? What do I truly believe matters? And they're getting rid of stuff. They're getting rid of junk. They're getting rid of ideologies that don't work. As they're cleaning out their basements and their attics, those outdated ideas, well, I can't do this. This isn't right. Well, why can't you do that? What's holding you to that? Why are you believing that still? or in some cases, it's cementing those beliefs, saying, oh, this is absolutely what I believe, and this is why I believe it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what works for me.
And somebody just said, you know, do you believe in God? And you know, I believe in God. I believe in goddesses. I believe in the gods. I believe that there are supreme beings that have helped us. And you know, it's sort of like, you know, I think that Christianity has a singular God. Wiccan has the duality, but
right.
But it is God. It is not.
It is the one. We believe that God and goddess combine to the one.
Yes.
And you know, it's a human condition that we want to put a face and a name on that which is truly faceless and nameless.
Mm-hmm.
What does God look like? We want to see a face looking back at us when we kneel or we sit down to worship. And for most of us, and you know, as a medium, you could speak to this. I know we're running out of time here, but when our beloved dead come back to visit, very often, even though they are not in 90-year-old bodies anymore with gray hair put up in a bun, they'll appear in that form so as not to scare us or so we recognize them. But don't usually prefer to be back like at their prime in their like their 30s when they were young and vibrant and healthy, or
oh,
an age where they were comfortable? That's where that's the spirit form they want to personify.
Mm-hmm.
I'm under the you know assumption of I'm not a medium. I need to make that clear. I'm not a medium.
But as with those spirits that come in, I mean we all have within us that spark of the one of God. That light that is our spirit that you know is drawn to that other light when we cross over, drawing us home to our source, our energy, our God. You can call it anything you like. You can call it the one. You can call it the God and goddess. You can call it Shiva. You can call it anything you like. But yes, there is a God, a one, a source.
And also, while I think that we all contain a spark of the divine, we are not the divine, and that's where I tend to part ways with New Ageists. I don't believe that we are the divine. I believe that there is an all-loving, all-knowing entities.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason to do ritual. There's no reason to do. If it's all within myself, then why should I bother? I have all the answers. It's all me.
There's a
new move with young people, and it's all within you, and they exist because of you. And I'm like, no, that's not what I believe.
I think that it's very much like. This is going to sound irreverent, and I apologize to everyone I offend. But my animals, my pets, because I don't want to lose them, because I don't want them to become lost if anything happens, they're microchipped. And I believe that in that same way, that spark of the infinite in us is our microchip that draws us back to the source when we get off path and when we lose our way.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to agree with you. I believe that there's inherent good in every in almost every person. Some people, that's a whole other topic. The people that come in with different agendas, and if they're even people at all. Sometimes I think we entertain angels unaware, as they say.
Absolutely.
Be kind to strangers, for therefore many have entertained angels unaware. But I think there's the other side of that coin too. I think sometimes people we think are people are maybe. I believe in evil. I believe that there is actual evil, and I believe there's actual perfect love, and I think in those two spheres exists all manner of creature. And that's my belief.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's just my belief. But it's a fascinating topic, and it's spirituality since I was a little girl. I mean, I was little, 3, 4, 5 years old, sharing what I thought, people coming to me asking me questions for things because I saw things, knew things, and that's the truth for most of us who have found our way here these things started when we were very, very young. And I was blessed to have a family of people. My great aunt read tea leaves. And, talking about your dreams over the breakfast table wasn't seen as being evil or bad. It was interesting. You know, you shared those thoughts. You shared those visions. I know I saw an angel when I was like 4 years old at my grandmother's house. And I saw this magnificent, and I was wide awake.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what I saw. So it's not, for me, it's not a question of believing. It's a question of knowing. I know there's another life. I know that there is a divine being. I have spoke with my guides. They have spoke to me. And what I try to do in my shop, what I try to teach, if anything, is first of all to try to live, walk my walk, try to teach by example, but to try and help people rather than saying, well, I'm this great knowledgeable person, and let me show you how it's done. Let's talk together what works for you. And if this is important to you, let's think of all the different ways you can do them, and they don't cost money, and no one should be extracting money from you. No one should be telling you that only they can do it and you can't. And I know this is a big thing for you too, Barbara.
Oh yeah.
You know, you were taught, and in turn you teach.
Try to.
No, you do a good job. You know. It's not, everyone has gifts, but they have to be honed often. And the more you use them, the more they becomes easier.
Well,
and that's
absolutely.
The thing that separates many of us from others is that we use our gifts more often. And witches see the magic in everyday events. You know, like I said, that bus trip for my son, that became magical. Because all the things he wanted to see, and he wasn't scheduled to see them, they weren't on the stops. And yet, look at the turn that took. And all he did was set it in motion and say, gee, I'd really love to see those things. And I remember saying, maybe I'd be on the way back, honey, they'll take a different route. You know, or maybe on the way out there, they'll take an altogether. Because if you told me on the way out that, you know, dropping him off, oh, by the way, your son's going to be down in Texas and Mexico, and he's going to see Sedona, and he's going to, you know, he's going to see red caverns and red rock and all this. Like, no, he's not. He's going up north. And that, to me, is where faith comes in. Faith is where
Absolutely.
You say, no, you know what? I really believe this is going to happen because I asked for it, and I love that part. That's in the Bible, but I think it's having that childlike faith. That's something that knows more than we know. That's capable of more love than we're capable of. Has our back.
Yeah, and I think there's a genuineness too. You know, he didn't want to do it for a selfish reason. He just had a truly a desire to see those places, and happily. It worked.
Mm-hmm. The universe conspired to make that happen.
Absolutely.
Against any reason to believe it would happen, it did. And that's the stuff I love. I hear stories like that every day in my shop.
Oh,
and I've experienced that all the time myself, those synchronicities, those happy happenstances that are just too amazing to be pure coincidence. I don't believe in coincidence anyways, because of course I believe in a divine being that is at the basis of every action. So, you know, you ask if I believe in God, yes, the truth is I deeply, fervently, and with all my heart and soul believe in God. I just call God a different name, and maybe he/she looks differently than what you call God. But
oh yeah, and not only that, but you know, I really believe that God believes in us.
Let's hope so. There are days I think he's doing a facepalm, but
I think
there is. Now?
There's a synchronicity here going on. I don't think we're just a I don't think we're just a science project. I think one hand washes the other.
No, you're right. You're right. I do. I believe it.
Well, I gotta sign off here. This has been so much fun. We're going to have to do it again.
Thank you, Barbara. It's a delight being here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it you were phenomenal, and I do want to get you back on, and we'll have to compare our calendars.
That sounds great. I'm always here for you. Thank you again.
You're welcome, and thank you. And I want to thank everybody for being here. I want to thank Jeannie for being her normal self here and hanging in there with us. And thank you guys for being here. Thank you for asking the wonderful questions you asked. And do look for us on Friday. We'll be here at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And we'll be doing spiritual readings and our normal stuff. So thank you again for being here. It was great to have your energy and your questions and your insights. Take care now and good night.